So good afternoon. I will now call this meeting of the Senate Transportation Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is a little bit late. It is 1:35 or 1:34 p.m. Tuesday, March 14, 2023. Let the record also show that we have a quorum to conduct business. Present today is Vice Chair Wilson, Senator Jesse Keel, Senator Lukey Tobin, and Senator Rob Myers, myself, Chairman James Kaufman. I see no other legislators in the room quite yet. Staffing the committee today is LIO Moderator Jake Wade and Johanna Crossett from Records. My Transportation Committee, Emma Torkelson. And let's see, we're short on punny sort of jokes about cell phones. Anybody got a good one? So relative to this, so let's say either put your cell phone on silent, or let's duct tape it to a runaway drone. How about that? So today we'll be hearing a presentation from the University of Alaska Fairbanks and the Department of Transportation on UAF's drone program. And I think it'll be pretty interesting for all attending and watching. Presenting today is Ryan Marlowe, the CMS UAS Program Director Coordinator for DOT Statewide Aviation, and Nick Atkins, Deputy Director. I just introduced you, but would you please introduce yourself, put yourself on the record for the committee, and proceed.
Ryan Marlowe, Alaska DOT.
And I'm Nick Atkins, Deputy Director of AQUASA.
Please proceed.
So the fundamental question everybody asks is why Alaska? Why do we have one of the best drone programs in the entire country here in Alaska? And the answer is we have a need. The impact of this technology is going to be massive. We save lives with it. We improve quality of life with it. We help keep the best and brightest in our state. You know, it's a case where there are so many opportunities. It's very hard to encompass just how exciting this is and how many different ways this is going to touch people. So QASI is the University of Alaska Center of Excellence for Unmanned Aircraft Research. You'll know unmanned aircraft is drones, and we are working on safely integrating drones with manned aircraft, traditional aircraft, in the airspace. And the whole purpose of what we're doing is to do this safely. So these are long distance missions in the airspace where you are not seeing the aircraft in the space around it with your own naked eye. You are requiring electronics through radar or onboard cameras to identify potential hazards in the airspace. So we've done everything from looking for whales in the St. Lawrence Seaway to flying over wildfires and looking at fire behavior. We've done monitoring of pipelines. We've measured glaciers and their motion. So there's a tremendous amount of stuff you can do with an unmanned aircraft on the scientific front. But additionally, there's the whole aspect of how do you benefit Alaskans. The key thing here is a lot of what we are looking at doing is stuff that is really not that safe to do using traditional aircraft. So if you're in a remote community, the only way you get goods is they're flown in. Well, that can be really risky for the pilot. So if we can get, you know, milk and diapers out to villages on a more regular basis, we actually are changing people's lives and helping them live in the place they want to be. And we're a part of that. The university has given me a tremendous opportunity. I never would have believed that I would be running one of the top drone programs in the world. I wouldn't have had that opportunity at other universities. And a lot of our employees are getting to experience that same sort of empowerment. And it's exciting. You know, we are on the cutting edge. We are proposing missions no one has ever done. This is something that is going to help people. It's going to increase safety and improve the quality of life.
Well done.
We are we're very fortunate to have such amazing partners within the state on leading the effort of unmanned systems integration, autonomous platform integrations, and we're seeing a lot of this fall into advanced air mobility. With advanced air mobility, this is the deployment of integration not only for unmanned aircraft, but all aircraft. So safety of the airspace, integration, communications, the build out and means necessary to facilitate these operations safely and kind of build that next gen airspace of the future for Alaska. So wanted to kind of start with some general overviews of what is AAM, what is UAS development, and what's happening in the state here right now. At the moment, there's about $35.4 million programmed for calendar year 23. This is coming in through grants, USDOT, FAA, State of Alaska, private investments, Quasi. We're seeing a large growth in the unmanned sector, as well as miniaturization of a lot of the aviation technologies. One of the most interesting facts, though, is Alaska leads the nation with this one metric. We have more unmanned aircraft registered in the state than manned aircraft. That happened this year, and we're starting to see this rise quite substantial. On average, it's been around 20 to 30% growth each year in the unmanned sector. Here on the screen, you can see the per capita on where a majority of these systems are being registered at. But at the moment, it's about one aircraft per 81 people. And you can see the where they're being used all the way out in Chimia, southeast, up in the Arctic, and even in places that there are no communication procedures. So we are seeing this technology be utilized in almost every aspect on the way that Alaskans utilize it for change detection, wildlife monitoring, survey, inspection, or cinematography.
Please, if we could. I just want to mention to folks listening and on the committee that when I first heard about the program, I was expecting first to hear all about, you know, the aircraft, the drones. But what unfolded in the conversation before we had this hearing was the much larger program of improving the tech, the communications, basically the data and communication network that will help all air travel in these areas particularly. So I just thought that was interesting. So I just wanted to give a little bit of context before we proceeded too far.
Thank you. One of the big items in exactly that is just taking a look at what our transportation system does for us. So we've been focusing heavily on GIS integration, starting to take a look at those analytics of where we are putting the most spending, but taking our approach from a reactive approach to a proactive approach. So getting ready for these next gens and multimodal transportation. You can see here almost every one of our communities, and we're well aware more than 20% of the, or 80% of the communities are off the road system. So every one of them is based off of air travel. And with this, looking for new ways to facilitate that in safer ways, more reliable ways. Now, working with the FAA, we've outlined a couple giant strategies with this. So with the FAA Alaska Aviation Safety Initiative, the primary five items that we've been working on, weather reporting enhancements. So our AWOS, ASOS, those are a big item and are required for many of our air carriers to be able to land and have scheduled operations. Aeronautical charting, navigation strategy development, surveillance is a massive one, as well as safety outreach. But all of these kind of built the foundation for us to be able to decide where we're going next as an airspace integration. So at the moment, we have a gap analysis on.
Oh. We have a question. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize for the civilian questions. I don't know what AWOS and ASWOS mean, and I don't know what you mean by surveillance.
Perfect. Let me jump back here real quick. Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Keel.
But before we go on, I just want to note for the record that Deputy Commissioner John Bender is also online for questions. Thank you.
AWOS. AWOS is the Automated Weather Observing Stations. This is a program that's currently run by, and we'll discuss a little further here with FAA, currently run and managed by FAA on certified weather in these airport environments. So before you take off on a flight, it is required that weather is reporting in that environment to make sure that that flight can get there safely. In many places throughout the U.S., it's an easy item to go and drive and fix these stations. However, we're running into significant issues here within the state maintaining this program and getting that data out on real-time systems. So, what you'll see here on our roadmap planning is system transparency. So, being able to visualize that data and showcase what that looks like with surveillance technologies. And surveillance, of course, in many instances might sound like a bad thing, but this is looking for ADS-B traffic, monitoring of unmanned systems, monitoring of scheduled flights. So it's utilized as the terminology to bring in that traffic management system and broadcast it so everybody knows where everyone's at and we have a safer airspace. So that is those items tied together with our planning roadmap and our partners are what is building a safer airspace. And unfortunately, the lowest common denominator is what we are building this for, is we have folks that are not using radios, are not filing weather plans, are not basically showing where they're flying at. And so we have to build a system that can avoid or detect these non-compliant individuals. So with all of that, taking that information and visualizing it so that we can share it, transparency. The dashboard up here is one of the dashboards DOT's been working on with aviation to showcase how airports are funding is being utilized, what we're spending the most on, airfield maintenance or resurfacing, but digitizing this so that everyone can see what's happening with these environments and how they're being digitized so that next-gen air services can be applied to them. So, for example, this is Sandpoint Airport. This is one of our items. We had received a report that the runway had dropped after an earthquake. Getting out there with the technology, being able to visualize that is something that we haven't been able to do before. But with LiDAR and a drone equipped with LiDAR, we're able to scan it in about 30 minutes and show here with the side profile that, yeah, the airport had dropped by 10 feet. So we're finding a lot of benefit in scanning large assets with this technology and being able to visualize with not only 3D point clouds, but being able to showcase what this looks like and immediately make recommendations on how much volume it takes to make the, bring that runway back up to grade. So part of our gap analysis that we've been working on with the Advanced Air Mobility outline is taking everything that we have in the state and kind of just bringing it to the surface. So between our distance measuring equipments, which is DME, voice comm coverage, next generation weather radar, taking all these services and putting them into a product that can be visualized by all assets of aviation. We talked about the AWOS dashboard. At the moment, this is what is currently having an anomaly or any issues across the state. But we have 65 stations that are in a status of disrepair after the typhoon and the issues. A lot of these are still awaiting service from the FAA. So by utilizing these dashboards, we've been able to showcase where these problems are and increase how we're attacking these together and getting these items fixed. So of course, with all things broadband connectivity, we're finding that a lot of the next-gen technologies is bringing out the essential items that we need in these environments to be able to live stream video, communications, control. At the moment, we utilize satellite-based C2 for control, cellular. So this is really allowing for us to see how a lot of these communities will be real-time, from the airport environment to the data that's being collected, being able to showcase that. And then tying all of this into a reference datum, the next gen of vehicles, aircraft, unmanned systems, we've been working with DNR on making sure that our statewide network allows for autonomous and next gen vehicles to be operated with precision. So from avalanche control to survey to all of these areas where we are utilizing systems that are close to terrain, this gives us precision guidance and mountainous areas. And lastly, wanted to talk about some of our two big items that we're working towards with our gap analysis is Bethel and Deadhorse. These are the two areas where we've been working with planners, DOD, but looking at expanding these areas to kind of be our airports of the future with remote towers, making them accessible so that unmanned aircraft can utilize them. So these are really the big push on can we update these and fix these airports that have problems for operations in the Arctic or operations there in Bethel and facilitate these operations before we start to expand out to other airport environments. And with that, all things UAS, as far as where to find more information on AAM or UAS procedures, you can find it here on our website. Switch over to you.
Thank you. Just a moment. Any questions?
For the record, Nick Adkins, Deputy Director of QASI. And we're going to kind of go through the slideshow and hit on a few things that Ryan had already mentioned because we've been working together with the state quite a bit. So this is our Sea Hunter in front of our hangar on East Ramp in Fairbanks, Alaska. At the University of Alaska, our core mission is safe integration into the airspace with drones, and that's kind of how we started out our program. We're supporting Alaska drone users in the industry and a lot of scientific research. It's kind of fun, actually, because we've got crazy-haired scientists in the basement that are bringing up payloads to put on our drones, so I enjoy my day job. We want to work right into the airports with our aircraft, and we want to do that. Go ahead.
Good question?
Yes.
Yes. Senator.
Thank you. Through the chair, just on your previous slide there, I just had questions in general in terms of and what types of drones the university and others are using. Are these all battery powered? Because I think that cargo delivery plane is not a battery powered plane that we're using drones for. So can we talk a little bit more just the basics of what type of technology just the drones that we're looking at and using within the state between the quadcopters and what looks like to be a model of the Predator type drones and Mr. Chair, just a little bit more basis for
just the scope of the vehicles.
Yeah.
Yeah, we would go into it a little more, but through the chair to Senator Wilson. Basically, most people think of a small quadcopter when they think of drones. If you look at the screen now, that Cessna Grand Caravan there is technically a drone. It's an optionally piloted drone is what it is. So there's a pilot on board while they're testing the systems, and that'll be up here this summer, as a matter of fact, with Merlin, one of the companies we're working with. So when we say drones at a QASI, we're talking massive, huge drones all the way through to deliver out to the villages, for example. And to deliver something out to the village, we need something more than a quadcopter. A lot of people focus in the lower 48 in particular about getting their pizza to the door. We don't really have that problem up here in Alaska. If you're close enough to get pizza to the door, you're fine with the car bringing it to you. We're having trouble getting chips and Pepsi out to the village. And that's what the kids are asking for when I go talk to them.
Follow up, please.
Just follow up. For the record, we're not spending tens of millions of dollars to deliver chips and Pepsi.
No, it's diapers and village and diapers and milk. I mean, everything that is needed out there because they get everything through air traffic.
Yes, I just want to clarify that.
But thank you for that clarification. But I guess scale-wise, really, there's a few technical limitations, but as far as the size of the aircraft, really, once the technology is in place, provided there's adequate airstrip, and public acceptance, there's a few limitations to this.
To the chair, with that note, even the runway will eventually no longer be a limitation because they're doing vertical takeoff and lifting aircraft. They're building machines that will just land at, picture a helipad, and we're going to call it vertiport. They'll have systems on the ground to help guide it into that port, precisely into that spot.
Okay, well, thank you. Let's proceed. Good question. Oh, another question. Follow us.
Yes. So how much AI technology is going into drones?
Massive amounts. Through the chair to Senator Wilson, massive amounts of AI is happening. They're building it for the payloads that are sensors that are looking for things. Later in this, we'll talk about our AI that we build at the university for spotting whales. So you'll have that side of it. And then right now, Merlin, for example, has computers that are riding along an aircraft to collect information about the routes and the radio calls that are made because they're going to work on a voice system. So they're collecting that information now to train the computers.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Let's go.
Just to give you a picture of who we are in Akwasi, all of our pilots are pilots. We have a background in flying many different machines. A lot of veterans and then scientists are working along with us. We have airframe and power plant mechanics on station so that we can meet the needs of what the future will be for regulation on the drones for maintenance and flying them. The theory is we have an understanding of the airspace, and so that's why we have those folks there, along with retired FAA folks, so we can speak FAA better. And there's just a quick history of the amount of aircraft that we've flown in the University of Alaska at Akwasi.
Question?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So since we're talking about pilots, I'm curious with with all the new regs coming out from the FAA, has the FAA started talking about licensing different between regular pilots and drone pilots?
Through the chair to Senator Myers. The plan, basically, we're working with SHRE, for example. SHRE is a safety organization with 15 core schools involved. We're one of the schools, and we're helping the FAA write those regulations. So how do you train a pilot to operate a machine that they've never been in an aircraft before, if that makes sense? And then you also have the standards of the aircraft itself. It has to meet a certain standard. And when you're talking about a drone, for example, we don't need seatbelts in a drone, so we don't have to have a standard for that. It's a pretty simple thing to go on, but when you have other questions like removing a battery and replacing that, is that a maintenance action or did you just refill the airplane? So those are the pieces that we're working with the FAA through the ASHRAE program, for example.
Let's proceed.
I'm going to skip to this slide here. What Akwasi is, so that folks have an understanding, we're the only one in one organization that has all of these under one roof, which is the Center of Excellence, the ASHRAE that I was speaking about before. Beyond, which is a program that's an initiative to help get small, mostly small aircraft, when I say small, 0.55 to 55 pounds, into the airspace safely, and working on things like beyond visual line of sight. Alaska, we've asked for permission to do larger aircraft. So we're one of the places that they get to come to and test their aircraft if somebody's building a drone. With that, we also have a test site. We were designated a test site for the FAA in 2014. Which gives us quite a bit of permissions. With that test site, we have test ranges, picture an airspace where we're allowed to operate across Alaska in multiple places, and we're also in the lower 48 with that, testing many different drones with many different partners. The next gen piece, which is CASA and UAMD, I like to describe it as the kind of what's coming next for the FAA, and we're working with them on those what's coming next. How does a drone, for example, go through controlled airspace? So that's what we're working on in CASA. UAMD, we're working on how can we use drones better for TFRs, temporary flight restriction, where we're doing firefighting. And then how can we get the information out to the other users of the airspace that this action is happening sooner? Because it takes a little bit for a TFR to actually be put in place, but some of that firefighting has already begun. So with electronic flight bags, you know, your phones and the computers that are in the airplanes now, that can be put right into the airplane as they're going along and the route changes, and all of a sudden there's a fire over here. So those are the kind of things we're working on there. We are continuing to fight to keep the beyond visual line of sight argument going, if you will. We understand that we have to get that beyond visual line of sight, because right now a drone technically has to be within line of sight, and it means you got to watch it with your eyes. We have already flown beyond visual line of sight at the University of Alaska. We had the first permissions to do that along the pipeline just north of Fairbanks a little ways. And we did that using radar, ground-based. It's a wonderful win, but having ground-based radar across the state is a little bit tough here, so we're looking for multiple platforms to be on the drones or other aircraft. Here's a list of some of our partners. If you guys have questions about those, please let me know. But you can see there's quite a few folks behind this. Raytheon's going to be putting radar in the state this year. They're coming up this summer. We got Echodyne and other partners. Fury's involved in this. It's fun to work with these companies. Three of those companies are basically they're building a drone out of a Cessna Grand Caravan, which we think is a great platform for Alaska. We did have our SHRETS and our stakeholder meeting August 16th to lay out our mission.
We have a question.
I just want to make sure the Cessnas, those are gas powered, right? Those
correct.
Okay.
Correct.
And I guess, Mr. Chair, if I could follow up.
Follow up.
What's the capabilities in terms of weather capabilities of flying? How many knots can wind knots can we expect these drones to fly in?
Through the chair to Senator Wilson. That's a tough question, because you're talking about many different platforms. As far as the Cessna Grand Caravan, it would meet the normal limits of that aircraft. So if it has de-ice, for example, then it could fly into icing. If it has no de-ice, it can't. So we'd still have the physical limitations of any other aircraft. The major difference, if it were a drone, you would be able to go to an airfield that was 0-0, for example. There's no visibility as long as there's not icing stopping it. Whereas a pilot has to see the runway environment before they can continue to that landing point.
I guess, Mr. Chair, if I follow up. Through the chair, just does one of those remote operators also have to do the same, I guess, piloting structures? Do they still have to go into stalls and recover safely from piloting one of these Cessna type of drones?
That's coming with the regulation through the FAA for the large drones. The only drones that have regulations currently on the books is 107, which would be 107 Federal Aviation Regulation, which is 0.55 to 55 pounds. We do believe there's going to be a process, and the FAA is working in that direction, and we're helping them build those. So, yes, whether or not stalls, for example, would be part of that, I don't have the answer to.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's proceed.
Real-world cases, we talked about the diapers and milk to the village. We are agnostic to which technology actually wins some of these, if you will. We're an agency that tests the people that are working on the detect and avoid technology, for example. A piece of equipment that is placed on a drone or an aircraft that looks out in front of it and determines if there's another aircraft in its path and will send that information back to an autopilot, for example, and then the autopilot will make a decision on whether or not it needs to move left, right, up, or down.
If you could just explain that we don't fly a box.
So we don't fly a box. Sorry, through the chair.
I never fly a box.
Yeah. So the thing is we are constantly asking permission to do more advanced things from the FAA. So we're constantly putting in what's called CONOPS, is the way they ask for them, and we give them an idea of what we want to accomplish. So, for example, we're working on a beyond visual line of sight flight from Kenai out to a platform. And we have radar now that can see far enough, so we want to use the same mindset that we used up north to watch the drone with the radar. So a person is watching the radar that's trained to understand what they're looking for on that radar system, and that's how they see it. And then they're able to bring that gallon of water back to the land for the sampling. So that's not necessarily allowed, so we have to tell them why are we doing that and how are we expected to do it safely. What are our mitigations? Who's flying it? And we send them a resume of who's doing it and what we plan to use for mitigation. So that's why we don't fly a box. We're constantly asking for different permissions.
Thank you.
I'm working with Merlin Labs, which I'm really excited about. They did this wonderful thing, and when they came to town, they started asking people how things are done in Alaska so they could track the routes and see how they were going to operate here. Our cargo delivery goals, we want to include medical supplies more frequently to remote communities. Like we've said many times, we really do have a last hundreds of miles problem. It's not that door to door, you know, getting your burrito or your coffee. We're in partnership with the local air carriers, because the 135 operation, that's when you're going out to the villages, that's the way it's going, and the FAA is using 135 as a way to get drones into the business of delivering cargo. Now, like I said before, the drone isn't a direct fit. So how do we make this drone fit into this program? When a 135 operation, they have titles for all the people that are involved, and they have titles for the aircraft, and they're certified. So how do we get to that level with a drone? That's what we're working on with the FAA. We do think this is going to extend careers for pilots. Is that a question?
Senator Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this slide, where you're saying you can fly when traditional aircraft can't, and I noticed a number of other slides talking about safety and stuff. Mm-hmm. My question, I guess, is is there something inherently safer about a drone, or is it just that because there's not a pilot on board, we're willing to take more risks than we would if there was a human life at stake?
Through the chair to Senator Myers, there's a little bit of a yes to both of those statements. So, in other words, we can use drones that will not come back to go do research on volcanoes. We can use drones to go do dropping explosives, ordnance, to get a avalanche to go instead of having other people go measure it and things. So there's that aspect of it. And then the other piece of it is the computers are starting to win. The human error is the biggest problem in most aviation accidents. So as the computer learns more and more, it's going to not fly into the ground, hopefully, because it said it can't fly here, if that makes sense. It won't have the mindset of, I can do better. Does that make sense? So, and we do believe it's going to be much safer.
Thank you. I think another benefit is a drone gets weathered in, let's say. That's fine. It's not going to get angry.
Nope.
Nope. At least not yet. We're hoping. So
far they haven't gotten mad at us.
All right, thanks.
All right. And here's some of our fleet. We, in Akwasi, we have the Sea Hunter there and the Centuries. The Sea Hunter is the twin-engine airplane, about 280 pounds, and then about 330 pounds is our Century, the single-engine platform there. And we're using these to do concept proving, for example, working out at Fairbanks International, how does a drone operate on the airport, and how do we talk to everyone? There's many questions about how that played out first.
We have a question. Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. I can always wait to the end of the slide. Your progress and flow. How much for each one of these drones?
Through the chair to Senator Wilson. These drones, so for example, we have 10 of the Centuries, the single engine one. Jimmy Parrish was able to acquire these. They're a former military contract that didn't beat out another contract. And so we were able to get those for about $10,000 plus shipping. So those drones were an absolute steal because along with those came some very expensive cameras and hardware. We're pretty frugal at Akwasi because we weren't used to having money. We have a little bit now, but we weren't used to it before. So those were relatively inexpensive. The Sea Hunter, that one we have two of. I don't remember the original purchase price. We have put quite a bit of effort into it, rebuilding it with our mechanics, who are certified mechanics for aircraft. And we made the fuel system better, the electrical system better, you know, and just vastly improve it. So if we were to put all of that into it, that would be a pretty expensive machine. There are the only two in the world that exist. So it also carries the world first AI that can spot whales from 2,000 feet up to 3 meters below the surface. But I could get back to you and give you an exact price where we're at on that machine. I don't have it with me today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just looking for a ballpark
figure. Okay.
I have a quick question. The aircraft with the kind of delta wing configuration there, what's the purpose of that design? I mean, I know aerodynamically, but are they a test bed for a certain type of operation?
Chair Puffin, this was designed by the military. It was designed to take over a military contract to the Navy, so they made it as an observation aircraft. It was going to go out and look at other things, and it had requirements it had to meet. It had to fly 6 hours. It had to fly above 15,000 feet or 10,000 feet, if I remember correctly. Basically, another company won. And then we got it. Now, the mindset behind their actual design in the beginning, I'm not sure of.
Thanks. I get it with the military application.
Yep. Great. On May 22nd, 2022, after asking in February of 2018, we did get permission to actually fly our Century off of Fairbanks International. It may not seem like a big deal, but we were in the traffic pattern with the other aircraft on East Ramp. They actually moved us to the other side, to the international side, if you will, the large runway, to make room for other traffic. And then I think one of my favorite pieces is one of the pilots that we didn't know they knew how to work Facebook. They actually left a comment on how well we and professionally we operated. So that was a big win because we were in the same pattern with them. This took quite a bit of coordination between the Department of Transportation, the tower, FAA. I mean, the list goes on and on. And it went off without a hitch. We're very happy with this. So, but it does take time to do this correctly, and it takes the right team to do it, working with everybody in the state. So, thank you, Ryan, and the rest of the team, even Troy back there. We got this is our next piece. This is what we're looking forward. That is not a corridor. That's just a representation of what's called a COA, a certificate of authorization or waiver, that allows us to fly from Fairbanks International over to Nenana. And this is going to be our first piece of showing how we can do deliveries down the river, for example, further down. And we need to do it, you know, somewhere that it's relatively safe. We've gone out to the south here to avoid some other areas, people, houses. And then we can fly our Sea Hunter, our Sentry. We can add aircraft to it with our new permissions. This is a big win. And this summer we'll be making flights back and forth with aircraft that are ready for that and meet the requirements that the tower and FAA has laid out, first operated international. While over in Nenana, we're able to test some first-time flight of aircraft. Next is the emerging technology ranges. Pretty excited about this. Nenana, we're building a hangar. Palmer, we're talking to folks to get into a hangar that should work out. I should see them on the 27th. And then Valdez will be down there too. We're looking for folks that can help us find a hangar. Main reasons for these places is Palmer has plenty of wind, so we can find plenty of wind problems for people to test their drones there and find out what their limits are. And then Valdez, we have plenty of fog. I mean, it's just fogged in often there, so we can work on the pieces there. And then Nenana, we got the cold, just about as cold as we're going to get anywhere else in Alaska. We can go further north if we have to, but we get plenty of cold weather there. This is basically to test what they're capable of. What can these drones do? And they're making a lot of drones in California, and they don't think of cold like we do. It's not even in the same league. So we are building a hangar in Nenana. We have to approve a 65%. This just happened yesterday. 65% build, and then it'll go out to bid. So we're pretty excited about it going out to bid because we've been working on this for just over a year now to get the hangar permissions. If you haven't built a hangar through the university system, it takes quite a bit of permission, and everybody, and we're all learning. None of us know how to do this because, you know, I haven't done one before. So we are getting much closer. We do have the land at Nenana. We have 92,000 square feet to put a hangar that's big enough to fit a Cessna Grand Caravan. We based it off of that because that's the largest aircraft we're currently working with. We do hope to have larger ones, but there's also a space limitation in different areas. On February 6th, we were really excited. We got a 44803C waiver. Now, what this means to Alaskans, in my opinion, is before we were only allowed to do large drones flights for aeronautical research. And it had to fit into that aeronautical research. So if you were building a drone and you were a company coming to get testing and you wanted to just do a demo or you wanted to do training, that technically that wasn't allowed. So we had to have some kind of aeronautical research. Well, now we can let somebody come up and say, I want to do a demo because I want to sell this machine. So we can allow that to happen. We also have permission to just add an aircraft with Dr. Kathy Cahill's signature. She's a signature authority inside these COAs that allows us to have an airworthiness and sign off the teams that are flying it to make sure they hit a standard. We can do that for any aircraft 299 pounds and below without going back to the FAA immediately. Whereas before, we had to do what's called a pen and ink and ask permission to put every new aircraft on there. Now, if we want to go larger than 299, we go back to that same process, but this is going to make it much faster. We're pretty excited about this.
We have a question. Senator Keel.
The two types of drone you showed us before, what did they weigh?
Through the chair to Senator Keel, the two that were in the hangar that we own, there's about 340 pounds on the Sentry, and then our Sea Hunter is 299 pounds. The Sentry was already on our COAs, so we're allowed to fly it still.
Let's proceed.
Up at the university, we have multiple systems out watching and working on. When I say watching, they're looking at the airspace. They're looking to collect information about how traffic operates to help with our DAA, the detect and avoid systems. And then we're also going to be using this for counter drone work later. So we do understand drones could still be used for not so good purposes. So we need to watch that part too. We are working on that. The pipeline monitoring that I already mentioned to you, we do believe this infrastructure monitoring is going to be huge. A simple change detection algorithm could tell you whether or not the pipe has moved too far or there's a truck there that shouldn't be there. And we have systems that can actually fly the entire 800 miles of pipeline now. We don't have permission, but the technology is there to be able to fly the pipeline and look at it through AI and determine if there's a problem. Then you dispatch a crew to go fix whatever it is.
Senator Wilson.
Thank you. That brings up a question. Do you got, is there any entity that works on sort of anti-drone technology in order of how I would stop a drone? And I think about this for purposes of Department of Corrections. They've had some instances of people trying to, you know, drop packages into those facilities. Do you work with anything of that nature to, you know, just technology-wise in your industry?
Through the chair to Senator Wilson. Yes, we're absolutely working on counter-drone stuff with a couple different campaigns. One is A60 that's currently on pause. There's a lot of legal pieces to taking something out of the airspace, whether it's a controlled piece out of the airspace or it's a kinetic. So depending on the energy that's being used to take it out of the airspace, there's only a few agencies that are allowed to take something out of the airspace. If you don't know, a drone has the same protections as anything else in the airspace. So if somebody were to shoot down a drone, that's fines and prison time possibility for that drone being shot out of the air, because what most people don't realize is when it's shot out of the air, now it's uncontrolled. So yes, we are working on a couple of different things. There are companies that are working on radio signals that can interfere with it and just bring it down. There's companies that are, like I said, kinetic. They have an actual drone. It's a very heavy drone, quadcopter, and it goes out extremely fast, and it just rams into the other drones and takes them out of the airspace. There's quite a few companies. Counter drone is huge. It's massive.
Same subject you were talking about. When it's falling, it's uncontrolled. There's a company in Anchorage, I think, that technology somehow for deploying a parachute for drones to allow them to operate over crowds. Yes. So that I thought that was an interesting thing when I heard about it. So, you know, how do you safely manage a drone that becomes out of control or unpowered?
Yep. To the chair, yep, we worked with that company. They were making parachutes, and it was designed to spring out, and hopefully it would work at lower altitudes. And they were hoping to get permission to fly over operations over people is what it's called. So that's, and they're continuing to work on it. There's other companies working on it too. But what I love about it is that company's right here in Alaska. That's the kind of tech and the jobs that, you know, our kids are going to need to be a part of, we think.
Thank you.
Here's one of my favorite pictures. If you guys could take just a few minutes and tell me if you can find the whale. There is a whale there. I won't believe you if you say you can see it, just so you know ahead of time.
Upper top border.
Our AI was able to spot this from 2,000 feet up to 3 meters below the surface. That is, in fact, a North Atlantic right whale. There are approximately 350 of them left over in Gas Bay, and we are helping them. Now, when the camera takes a picture, the 42-megapixel picture is fed through the computer that searches the image and finds it. We used to use grad students to do this before. Now we're just feeding it through a computer and letting the machine take care of it. That information is sent back to the ground control station with a real-time location. What this does for over there in Gas Bay, obviously it saves those whales, because then they contact a ship that's transiting the area and they tell them to slow down. And they only have to slow down where that whale is, and then they're able to speed back up. It's a massive cost savings. This is what's happening in Canada, where we're flying hundreds of miles beyond visual line of sight now.
We have a question. Senator Wilson.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Chair, just wondering if you guys are working with Fish and Game to do this for their caribou count, so we can get better accurate caribou counts for those Nochina herds, and I forgot the one just north of that. It's the 40-mile herd, I think. And just wondering, are you guys helping them with those better accurate counts instead of just their pilot trying to guesstimate how many are down there?
Through the chair to Senator Wilson, yes. We would really like that, and as a fellow hunter, I would like it too. Most of the animal counts, if you don't know, many of the animal counts are being done, and there's nothing wrong with it. This is just a competition we're working with. It's literally a person who's trained and is, you know, they know what they're looking for, but it's a person looking out the window and marking down on a clipboard. And we think, for example, the moose counts, they can't even happen until the snow is on the ground. And we think with IR, we can possibly make that a little better. So we are working with them. We're going to start small and show that it can work, and then that would have to spread out across larger aircraft.
Thank you.
And so it's not here. Maybe you'll get to it, but there's a life-saving component to this. I know the Coast Guard or Navy had worked actually with pigeons that were trained because their eyesight is really sharp at one point. So I think this really ups the possibility of finding someone or a very small craft at sea?
To the chair, exactly. We have that, and just general search and rescue operations are greatly enhanced. A drone, you send it out on a pattern. We call it mowing the lawn. So it mows the lawn over the area that you're looking, and then it takes multiple pictures, and that picture can be scanned by AI, or you can just use it for IR. You can have the heat signature that you're looking for through a bunch of trees. We were looking for a child who ran away from home who had some problems, and 13 years old, and the officers were trying to find him. We didn't actually find them, but we were able to eliminate the area that they thought he was in for that whole time. And that saved them massive amounts of time because they were concentrating on that area, and then we were able to set up. And this was 4 years ago, and the technology is getting better. We can also put these drones with IR sensors in the hands of village public safety officers, for example, people who know the area and they know where people take off from normally to start searching right away. So. And then the disaster response, as we roll into this is where the drone becomes much safer, where you don't want a person looking in a volcano, where you know, we can send them into hurricanes, ice jams. We can check those out with causing other issues. The list goes on and on for the hazardous things that we can help with. Counter drone, we've already touched on this, so I'm not going to hit on it too much more, but we are working with the FAA through Assure, DOJ, Army. Multiple agencies are very interested in the bad things that drones can be used for and how do we stop them. And not just how do we stop them, how do we stop them safely? Because you can't just take a big drone and take it out and then have it go into the houses, right? You need to be able to do this safely. We do still trick kids into learning by letting them build drones. We have fun doing that. The kids really, they don't even know how much they're learning. Most kids have no idea how their cell phone works. They don't understand that they're carrying around a LiPo battery. They don't understand that they have three gyros in their pocket at all times. And that's the same things that are happening on these drones. So many of the things that, you know, when you're watching YouTube and you turn your phone to the side, that's the magic of MEMS gyros that's happening in there. Kids have no concept of that. But when they come to a camp like this, then they're forced to learn what a drone does. And then we pick on them about what they know about their phones. It ends up being really well. And then we've even had a few of the kids, because they all go home with a drone when we do this in the summer, 20 kids. And some of them still have the drones a year later, so pretty happy about that. The class is already full for this summer, just so you're aware. And there was 350 applications. We have 20 slots. So
I was going to say, your comment that most kids don't know. I was going to say, well, that would be true of most committees, but not this committee.
No, not this committee. I didn't expect it from this one. And with that, along with that, comes with our STEM outreach. So we're constantly going, we have money from the FAA, from the governor, from others, to do STEM outreach and go talk to kids, go talk to communities in general, let them know what's going on so that they can see this technology, and then hopefully we'll find those kids that have a spark, and then they stay here in Alaska because they have something they're passionate about to work on. In the next 6 months, we will have that Grand Caravan up here. We're hoping to have it at Fairbanks Aviation Day. That'll be May 20th. They're not sure if they're going to be allowed to be there, but I'm hoping that will play out. They have offered, if you're in an area where that is flying, you're welcome to go take a look at it. So we want to keep people updated on where it's going to be. And our first flight is going to be from Fairbanks to Nanana this summer, and we plan to do it with two different aircraft. One of them is our C-Hunter that you saw before, and another one is one we just purchased, or we're in the purchasing process. And it's a VTOL machine because we need to do the VTOL piece at the airport too. So we're going to have runway aircraft and vertical takeoff and landing aircraft. Counter drone is going to be nonstop. It's continuing. We're getting more and more requests for that. You're not the only ones that are interested in counter drone. We do have to watch that. We're going to continue to work with Ryan and his team. I think we've set up a really good team working with the Department of Transportation. And this all started when they got behind us on the IPP program to start that back then. And Ryan came on board, Troy agreed, and we've pretty much, if there's drones happening, one of the two of us know all about it, and we can help them move along safely and correctly.
Just a question. Do you have a mailing list that would alert us of those events?
To the chair, yes, we do have a mailing list. We're building it now. So what I can do is I can collect all of your emails, and we'll make sure that you get on there, whoever wants it. Or I can leave my card, and you can shoot an email so we know who to put on there.
So you, at this point, you certainly put you send it to the committee, and we'll send it out from there.
Okay, thank you. We're doing hiring with the faculty. This is where some of this $10 million is going. Instructors to support the curriculum, and we're building courses such as dual enrollment courses, for example. Eventually, we'll have an entire grown school is a plan to be right next to the CTC up there in Fairbanks. We think it's a really good fit because they're already doing the aviation thing, because this is working hand in hand with aviation that's already there. The FAA is kind of behind on the times with technology, and they're aware of that. They're recognizing it, and now they're trying to figure out how to fix that, and we're one of the organizations that's helping them. We've already identified our locations for the emerging technology ranges, and some of those are going to be active this summer with flights and testing happening right away. We've asked for more of the funding to continue this project, and then I would like everyone to be invited to the Global Autonomous Systems Conference in Anchorage. We're working with the state to set this up. It'll be August 9th through the 11th. If we get our way, I don't have his number, so if somebody does, people like Elon Musk might speak. We don't know if that's actually going to happen, but if you have his number, let us know. So we want this to be a large, anything and everything tech, if you will, tailored around advanced air mobility. And with that, remember, that's your regular airplane that's trying to get safely out to a village on their own or their float pond next to their cabin. Again, I skipped ahead, so we're trying to get the school done. We do recognize we got to train these kids. We got to let them know how they can get into these industries. We got to make sure they have the computer science knowledge, the general engineering knowledge, and the piloting knowledge, whether that's an actual drone pilot from the very beginning or whether they need to go through some kind of course first. However that's going to play out, we need to make sure they're ahead of the game, and our folks are the first ones to do this. We've already started hiring. I got a new pilot that started Monday. Our program has grown drastically from admins to professors. I hope you look forward to seeing some of the larger drones that will be flying. If you get a chance and you're in Fairbanks, we'd love to show you what we have going on. If we have flights happening, they're going from Fairbanks to Nana. You're welcome to those. And people are welcome to any of this. We're open about all of it. We want to make sure people know what we're up to, because we're trying to make sure we're presenting an actual solution to a problem, not just cool solutions. With that, pending your questions, it completes my brief.
Any questions? Senator Wilson.
I just want to say thank you for bringing this presentation to us. You guys did not drone on, and it was quite buzzing.
Oh, my. You've been just loitering there. That's just We have more questions, Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, I'm going to ask the question that's burning for the public, which is, how do you unpack how we control AI? I think immediately when I hear AI-controlled drones, I think Skynet and death. So what are the mechanisms that keeps us safe from not having these items maybe decide that we are no longer viable on this planet?
Through the chair to Senator Tobin, I believe the documentary of Terminator was incorrect. So just like anything else, AI can be used for good. It can be used for bad. The same with drones, and we're kind of working on both pieces of that. So when we are building our AI in-house, you know, we're looking for a whale. That's the kind of thing that we're talking about. We're making sure that a autopilot understands crosswinds that are coming ahead of it. So the turning into something more, we don't think is going to be a big issue, but we are aware of it. Anybody who's looking into AI isn't aware of the possible bad cases that could happen, they're kind of lying to themselves. But in general, AI is coming. We need to do it safely. Drones are coming. We need to do it safely. But again, I think the documentary is incorrect. So kind of pro Skynet.
I think we could have a future here. You may be cautionary tales or roadmap. So yes, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I guess the big question, you know, you talked about one of the big pieces of this possibility moving forward is cargo. How far away are we from you know, this turning into commercial cargo? Are we a year or two out, 10 years out, kind of where are we at here?
Through the chair to Senator Myers, I don't have an exact time on that. The permissions are one of the biggest hurdles. So, for example, there's many aircraft that could fly from here to Galena, or from Fairbanks to Galena, for example, and deliver an item. But there's the 135 component. Most people don't realize how huge that is because commerce and everything else is tied to that. And I think many of you are aware of that, but most people don't understand. There's a lot to go with that. So we have to prove that the system can do it by delivering nothing. Does that make sense? We're carrying weight. So we're at the deliver and deliver nothing to show that we can do this. And then now what do we need to change to make sure we can meet future regulations? And so as far as the timing, we do jokingly say around the office 2 weeks, but we haven't been right yet. So we're watching the time. We have made huge leaps in the last 5 years. Flying beyond visual line of sight, I'm not sure how many people grasp, because they think they're just going to go fly a drone in the airspace. They think of a drone. So a drone is a Christmas toy and it's amazing, or a drone is a bad thing. So if a drone is flying in the airspace without somebody actually watching it to see the rest of the airspace around it, and somebody's flying a Satabri or a Cub, which we have a lot of those here in Alaska, and a lot of those are flying at 400 feet, 300 feet, because they're over an unpopulated area and there's nothing wrong with it, we have to take the responsibility for that and watch out for them. So that's what we're going to do, is make sure we have those pieces on there, and we got to send that back to the FAA. So when we did that beyond visual line of sight, that was huge. So that's a big win, but it's a small step if you kind of look at it from the outside. So I don't have good timing for you, sir.
I thought maybe that 2 weeks was another Elon Musk joke for those that track those comments. So. Any other comments? Nothing. Well, I want to thank you all. I think this is fascinating. I think a little bit. There was an interview with a reporter and David Bowie back when the internet was still pretty new, and they got into the conversation about the internet, and David Bowie said, "It's going to change everything," and the reporter was incredulous. He was like, "What? It's just like, you know, it's just for messages," or whatever his limited perception was at the time, and it was like the interviewer could not understand what David Bowie was trying to say about what an electronically linked global network, what it would look like and what it could be possible. And so I think of this, it's a subset of that for sure, but it's a piece of it. So if you're talking about this greatly increased situational awareness in the sky, unmanned craft and manned craft, you know, or personed craft, if we want to be correct these days, the potential there for improving commerce throughout our state, for mobility, for getting goods, you couple this with the digital build out that we're doing with improved networks out in rural areas, you start putting this all together, it's a big game changer for much of Alaska that is unserved or underserved right now. So I think it's pretty amazing stuff, and I was really appreciated when we heard the initial story. I'm glad to have this hearing on it, and I look forward to future updates. So any last closing comments? With no further comments, I want to thank committee members and all for being here today. Especially thank you to the committee and LIO support staff who have helped today's committee run smoothly. I hope everybody feels it did. I thought it went pretty well. But I also want to take a moment of personal privilege and wish my committee aide sister, Sarah Torkelson, a happy birthday. And so I think with the will of the committee, we'll endorse that birthday wish. So thank you. I appreciate that. And for me, I wanted to do that because in part, being in the legislature, and I know that's for staff and for the elected folks, that it really takes a toll on personal life and being there and remembering things. And so with sincere best wishes, Sarah Torkelson, happy birthday. And with that, we are adjourned at 2:33 p.m. Tuesday, March 14th. Thank you.